Good evening, everybody. My name is Caterina Dalla Cura. I teach international relations at the LSE, and specifically the international relations of the Middle East. And I am honored to be chairing the session for today's event. This is a book launch. And an opportunity, as happens with book launches, of course, to discuss the substance, the core around which the book has been written, and present to you, the audience, the thoughts of the panelists on that topic. The relationship between Israel and Turkey is a very interesting relationship, going back, of course, many decades. A tumultuous relationship in many ways, particularly recently, but one that I think contains much more substance and sort of layers of types of relations than meets the eye initially. The 1990s was a period during which this relationship particularly prospered around security issues, but since the arrival of the AKP in power, there have been ups and downs, particularly around the Mavi Marmara incident and other such ones. So it is, I think, a significant gap that is being filled by the book that whose publication we're celebrating tonight. This is an edited collection. The editors are here, Ordna Almog, to my left, and Ayşe Gülsever, in the middle. They have brought together authors both from Israel and from Turkey, and they have tried to achieve in the book, I think, a dual objective. On the one hand, to offer a comparison between Turkey and Israel, particularly in the areas of national identity and the relationship between religion and national identity, and in the area of civil society. But they have also tried to bring authors to write who write on the actual facets of this relationship. So it's a kind of dual purpose book. The book is very detailed, it's very up to date, and that, I think, has been missing from the field, so we are grateful to have it. So without further ado, I'm going to ask our speakers to take turns. Each will be speaking for about 15 minutes. First, Ordna Almog, then Ayşe Gülsever. I will introduce them all in a second. And then James Kerr-Lindsay, who is our discussant, so to speak, for the topic, who will also be talking about the substance of the book, which he has, of course, had already. So, without further ado, let me turn to Ordna. Ordna, I mean, I have to say this is an LSE event. You will see why we're all sort of, we have various connections to the LSE, all of us, close connections. And Ordna is actually a graduate, a PhD graduate from the history department here. She has worked at Kingston University and other universities in the UK, and also now in Greece. And her main expertise is Israeli foreign policy, the Arab-Israeli conflict, and conflict resolution. So, Ordna, 15 minutes or so. Up to you. Let me stand.
Right. First of all, thank you very much all for coming, and for the LSE for hosting this event. On behalf of Ayşe Gül and myself, I would also like to thank Effie. First of all, she's not here, unfortunately, but Effie really introduced me to Ayşe Gül, and I'm very grateful. And Ayşe Gül, thank you for being such a great colleague. I think we are in evidence the Turkish-Israeli relationship can work actually quite well. And really, I mean, this is like our book, and we already worked before on an article together. Thank you very much. And I say again to Effie also for putting us in touch with Palgrave Macmillan. And I must say a very big thank you to somebody who's not here. She's over many miles in the United States, and that's absolutely our wonderful editor who edited our book, our joint book, and the conclusion and introduction, and that's Gina Reed, who has done an amazing job, and really, I don't think Aisha Gul and myself can thank her ever enough for what she's done to us. And of course, for the LSE for hosting this event. So, going finally to our topic, obviously, when Aisha Gul and I start thinking about it, we thought actually to bring scholars from both sides in order actually to give a full picture of Turkish-Israeli relationship. And if you look, actually, you see that attract a lot of, if you want, attention and interest, both on the Turkish side and on the Israeli side. I will just name a few people like Professor Amikam Nachmani, who wrote about it before it was really sexy and kind of attract a lot of attention. Ofra Bengio, both in Israel. So it really, you can see that there is a lot of work done on Turkish-Israeli relationship. So the place of our book is actually was aiming to bring scholars from, if you want, both sides, the Turkish and Israeli, to see how things are perceived from each side rather than to take one side. And also to look at, of course, the changes in the geopolitics that now occur in the Middle East and Eastern Mediterranean. So we have actually also covered all kind of aspect, and if you want, things that are coming from internal and external reasons. And we're focusing mainly really on the contemporary recent event. Having said that, of course, we, as historians, we always acknowledge the historical context, and the study has some historical part, but what we really wanted also to see is some issues that are outside the traditional paradigm of international history or international relations, like economic, tourism, national identity, energy, that have been absent from the study of Turkish-Israeli relations. And I think we both are very grateful, really, to our contributors, which really made this kind of book possible with the knowledge and expertise. So they are not here, but thank you very much. Now, a very quick glance at the book. The first two chapters address national identities and the changes in both country. The next two chapters deal with the major changes in the relationship, which brought about the Gaza issue, such as the Syrian civil war. Then we have like chapter 6, which provide a comprehensive analysis of multiple effects of the Syrian crisis on Turkish-Israeli relationship. Chapter 5 and 8 widen really the scope of the studying, looking at the broader geopolitics and geoeconomic changes in the Eastern Mediterranean and the Middle East. Chapter 8 focus on something which becomes very important, that the issue of energy and how it affects both sides. We have in Chapter 7, Paul Rivlin assess really the economic relation and trade between the two countries, and that's something really significant to Turkish-Israeli relationship, because trade was really going on in spite of all the difficulties. I'll attend to it a little bit at the end to see whether trade is enough to sustain really close relationship, and the answer in general is not. And in the concluding chapter, the last one, we have Galia Lindenstrauss, and she really addressed something which I found very, very interesting, and that's the connection between tourism and politics, which is normally not something that you actually see in the studies of international relations. Yes, I do have some slides, actually. If you think I know what to do, All right, here, and I knew what to do. Okay, right. So just as what you have in the slide is really just a little bit of information, because obviously we cannot cover everything. Okay, here is just some principle of Israeli foreign policy and Turkey, and also relationship with Turkey. Now, to the one who are not familiar with Israeli foreign policy, I would like to say that other countries have defense policies and foreign policy. In Israel, it's all together. The defense policy is the foreign policy, and the foreign policy is defense policy. There is really very little difference between that. And obviously security was and is and possibly will be always the main issues. Okay. Now, obviously, I don't have much time, so I will try to go quickly through some points. Something that I discussed with Aisha Gul is two anecdotes. There is actually a TV series, and Aisha Gul will correct me with my non-good Turkish accent. It's called Istanbuli Gaylin. Right, exactly. Which actually, there is a lot of admirers in Israel of this kind of program, and apparently the star of the show, in spite of death threat, actually came to Israel, and Israeli pay a lot of money to see him and absolutely admired him. So if you want this kind of side of the culture side, actually still attract a lot of Israelis. On the other hand, recently, the lovely son of Israeli Prime Minister Yair, and lovely in inverted commas, he called Istanbul Constantinople, which Erdogan, obviously, the Prime Minister, didn't like very much, and he told Netanyahu, you need to twist your son's ear for calling Istanbul Constantinople. Right. Okay, that's just two anecdotes to show that there could be all kind of multi-layers of the relationship, and it's not always just the politics one. Now, to look a little bit kind of an historical background, obviously for decades, Turkey was the only Muslim country to have recognized Israel. And for Israel, it was really an important, very important cornerstone, and was seen as a major success of its foreign policy. If you talk about Israel before the Egyptian-Israeli peace accord, Israel was really isolated in the region. And to have a country with its military might like Turkey, and also a Muslim country, I know it was not very Islamic at the time, but from Israel's point of view, it still was a Muslim country. To have its friendship, especially from the 50s with the Periphery Treaty, but later on in the 90s, with the military and strategic cooperation, it was something for Israel was absolutely vital and was seen as really very, very important. And it was always Israel during the time that was actually pushing the relationship forward. It was also, there were common things between Turkey and Israel, like Cold War, Western orientation. Israel at the time was much more secular than today. Obviously, the same is true about Turkey. And they were both close allies of the United States. They were also worrying about kind of the same things like Iran, Iraq, Syria. So Israel was seen as a very important strategic partner for Turkey. Jumping to today, obviously we witness a very, very different state of affairs, to say the least. And the rise to power of the AKP signify really a very new era and very different relationship. I won't go too much about it because Aisha Gol is going to talk more about the ideology of the party, but you have a party which is Islamic kind of orientation is much more at the forefront. And at the same time, you have a very right Israeli government which claim the historical land of Israel. And that's really distance the two countries from each other. What you see today is very colorful exchange of words between the two governments, which is really sometimes to me like a football game where the two parties try to score more points at the opponent expense. And I will give you later on some colorful quotes from on each side. Now, I'm going to focus on few things. One would be the Palestinian issue, because from Israel's point of view, although it's different from Turkey, also in Iran issue and other issues, really for Israel, the fact that the AKP and Erdogan is a great friend of Hamas, and support them in the Gaza Strip and recognize Hamas, it's really like a major diplomatic, political, and security challenge. And that is really one, especially from Israeli point of view, the thorniest issue between the two, because this kind of recognition always also detect the policies Ankara is taking towards Gaza and towards Israel. So when Hamas actually assumed power in Gaza in 2006 and Turkey actually recognized it, it really was a major bone of contention between the two, because Israel also claimed that it's not just its country that see Hamas as a terrorist organization, but many other countries. And as such, if you want, Ankara really challenged Israeli policy in the Gaza Strip and especially the military operation against Hamas. So to a large degree, the operation, the military operation that Israel took, like cast lead in 2008-2009, that was really, if you want, when things start to get very sour. So although we really concentrated on the Mavi Marmara, it's really important, I think, to say that relationships start getting very sour from Operation Cast Lead. Erdogan felt that Israel didn't confine in him and made almost a joke of him. He also wanted very much to be a mediator between Israel and the Palestinians, and he felt that with Operation Cast Lead, that actually completely destroyed his chances or opportunity to be a mediator. So what we see here, that the conflict with the third party, in particular the Palestinian, a party Ankara felt very close to, made and still making the bilateral relations extremely difficult, okay? What we see also, that happened also in Turkey itself. You have demonstration burning Israeli flags, wave anti-Israeli and anti-Semitic slogan. Okay, and at that time, Israeli reaction was quite, I would say, low-key, because it didn't want to antagonize Turkey, which is still so is an important partner. However, in other cases, Israel was very quick to react. I'll give you an example. There was a TV series which really represented Israeli soldiers as baby killers and caused really fury in Jerusalem. Dani Ayalon, who was at the time Israeli deputy foreign minister, actually summoned the Turkish ambassador that I would not try even to pronounce. And he actually asked him to come to his office. The Turkish flag was not presented, only the Israeli flag, which was really great humiliation. And furthermore, he actually asked the ambassador to sit on a lower chair. Obviously, that was not very necessary, and it absolutely infuriated Ankara, and Dani Ayalon eventually had to send a full apology to Ankara, to the Turkish foreign ministry. Although you can see it is almost like a small incident, in fact, it's really, I think, demonstrate the state of relationship, where it's really like each side try to score more point. Now, just to mention that it's really not just the Palestinian state, the Palestinian issue, which divide the two. There is the Iran issue, there is the Kurdish issue, there is orientation with the United States, and so on and so on. A very different attitude towards the Arab Spring. Israel didn't like the Arab Spring and didn't thought it was something very welcoming. Okay, but having said all that, obviously set, if you want, the background to the biggest blow in their relationship, and that was the Mavi Marmara. Okay, the Mavi Marmara is also central to, if you want, the book, and obviously to Aisha Gol and myself, a chapter. Now, we both don't want to go into the details because obviously there is so many variation. I would just say to the one who are not familiar with it that in May 2010, Israeli Special Commando Unit raided a flotilla that aimed to challenge the naval blockade on Gaza, killed 9 Turkish people on board, and really brought the relationship to all-time low and led to a temporary breakdown of the diplomatic relations. Okay, so Mavi Marmara was really was, and I still is, the scars have not healed even until today. Now, the flotilla was organized by a Turkish NGO called IHH, which Israel regard, and I will quote, a terror-seeking Hamas-like organization. Okay, again, Dani Ayalon, the deputy foreign minister, called the flotilla the armada of hatred. Okay, and he said, its organization that known for the ties to global jihad, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas. Now, from Israel's point of view, its action in Gaza are fully legitimate for the purpose of self-defense. It's not even kind of contested, possibly. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, insisted that the blockade was necessary to prevent weapons from getting to Gaza, and he said, it's our obligation as well as our right, in accordance to international law and to common sense, to prevent this weapon from entering by air, sea, and land. Now, following the incident, we have the Palmer Investigation Inquiry, UN Inquiry, and this line again was repeated by the Israeli representative to the UN Commission. Okay, they actually said that they're not going to apologize for it and going to follow it. I don't have much time actually to talk about the Rapashmo. I would just say in 1 minute that in 2016, Israel and Turkey achieved a Rapashmo. Israel apologized to Turkey and paid $22 million. Okay. At the same time, and I will talk about it maybe in later on, is Israel established extremely good relationship with Greece and Cyprus, and also with Balkan states, and to a large degree also Israeli tourists voted to go to Greece, to Cyprus, to the islands by the thousand, leaving what they used to go again by thousand to all kind of sites in Anatolia, in Istanbul, and so on and so on. Now they're overwhelmingly going to neighboring countries like what we call the Hellenic option. So the Hellenic option for tourism and Hellenic option from Israeli point of view. Now, just to say, what is the prospect? What is the prospect for actually healing the scars? I would say that at the moment, Israel and Turkey have workable relationship, but the mood is very trying and challenging. So in our study, I think we're both concluding that although there might be avenues for cooperation, at the moment, we really don't know about the relationship. They are still very volatile. They are very unpredictable, and against what is still was and possibly will be for many years to come a very stormy Middle East.
We now turn to Ayşe Gül Sever, who is Professor of International Relations at Marmara University, but currently a visiting professor at IDEAS at LSE, and it's very nice to have her here. Ayşe Gül has written on and works on the international politics of the Middle East, on Turkish foreign policy, Cold War history, and regionalism. And I will ask her to speak for about 15 minutes again.
All right. I'll do my best.
It's very difficult.
Okay.
I apologize. I should have said at the beginning of the event that this is being recorded as an audio podcast. I need to say that. Sorry about that.
All right. So I think I need to pass. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. First of all, thank you very much for taking the time to join us this evening, this afternoon. I'd like to thank LSE IDEAS, the event organizers, Dora, Margarita, and also my special thanks go to Efi Pedaglio, who is not here, but as Orna has already mentioned, she was great support throughout the book project. I'm glad Orna has already made all thanking, so I'm lucky I can just go ahead. Actually, Turkish-Israeli relationship has never been an easy relationship. It has been lots of ups and downs, but the situation, especially in recent times, has become somehow more complex, more difficult to handle, and sometimes it is quite dangerous to manage. And especially almost every 10 days, there are headlines all over the place making the news, and what happened in Gaza, and what about Erdogan's reaction, what about Netanyahu's fury about all this situation. And so this is a part of everyday life almost, and it is making an effect on Middle Eastern politics, the Eastern Mediterranean, even beyond. In the book, as Orna has widely explained, there have been contributions from various scholars according to their expertise and areas of interest, including energy, state identity, regional security, so on and so forth. What I'm going to do, I'll stick to what I wrote in the book and just try to complementary to what Orna had mentioned. But I am sure there will be some overlapping points, and I'll try to avoid them. The thing is, when we look at the relationship, when we look at the two states, we could see some similarities. For example, both are non-Arab states. Both have close relations with the West. These two states are quite powerful in terms of military and economic means, so they could have real impact on the politics of neighboring areas. What else? For example, these two states have been under increasing international scrutiny in terms of their democratic credentials, so on and so forth. But of course, these similarities do not particularly mean something quite important to say that, okay, because of that particular common point, we could see this reflection in the relations. From time to time, closeness to the U.S., for example, could play a part, but this is not something consistent in the relations to see. Coming to the Turkish politics, the reflections of this relationship on Turkish politics, we could look to the issue from various perspectives. For example, from the point of symbolism, pragmatism, changing state identity, regional security, and all these in varying degrees could be our points of interest or approach to the relations. But as I've said, I'll stick to the political relations between the two sides in the 2000 in order to make my narrative rather short, in order not to take your time further. Before coming to the 2000s, I think it is important to very briefly recall some legacy that left behind following the recognition of Israel back in 1949. That was a very important step from a symbolism point of view as well, because a Muslim majority country for the first time recognized Israel. And it took another 30 years, as Orna said, to see another Muslim state, namely Egypt, to extend that recognition. And this was not out of sympathy or out of particular understanding towards Israel. That came as a byproduct of Turkey's desire to be a part of the Atlantic Alliance, to be closer to the U.S. But it is also important to remember that at the time, there was also this secular, westernized-minded government in power. So it was not that easy decision in terms of public reaction to recognize Israel. So let's move to the 60s, 70s, 80s. Of course, it is hard to say what happened throughout all these decades, but if one wished to make a generalization, we could call it as a hard-managed relations, because most of the time Turkey tilted the balance towards the Arabs. We could think of very tough reasons for that. For example, the Arab oil crisis, consecutive Arab-Israeli wars, the Cyprus questions. In all those factors in varying degrees made an impact on Turkey, and most of the time Turkey voted pro-Palestinian resolutions at UN. Having said that, most of the time between the sides, there were these damage containing. I mean, behind the closed doors, there were communications, and it was not like today. Even though, for example, when Israel declared Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel in 1980, again, the Turkish public was very reactionary, and the ambassador was withdrawn. Nonetheless, the situation was not the experience that we are having these days. And also it is perhaps a point to remember that in this relationship, withdrawing ambassadors or downgrading diplomatic representation is something not totally new to the 2000s. And the 90s, again, I think I have no time to explore a lot, but the 90s could be remembered as a period of exception. Almost in areas of, you may think there was this cooperation going on, especially security issues became the driving force behind this cooperation. Especially Turkey's concern about the PKK, Syria, and Iran, for example, made Turkey's decision to get closer to the Israelis. And also, it is important to remember that the military bureaucracy at the time in Turkey was very influential in promoting such a closeness between the two sides. And this is also something different from today. Today, there is no such Kemalist bureaucracy making an impact on defense policy or on the relations with Israel. Plus, we should be remembering the Arab-Israeli situation, the Palestinian-Israeli peace process at the time. And it was very important to see that these Arab-Israeli talks created a fertile ground on which the two sides were able to come together. For example, thinking of the Oslo process, all these declaration of principles, and the public opinion was quite receptive to the idea of doing business with Israel. So what happened? This is just a timeline, of course, to display the relationship in the course of the 2000s up to now, but this is just an idea to display the relationship has experiences some phases. For example, in the early years of the AKP government, the situation was a bit different from the period after the Mavi Marmara incident. For example, in the early times, there was this almost everything was usual and as usual. I mean, there was this Erdogan's visit to Israel in 2005. Then there was this effort on the Turkish side to get involved into Israeli-Syrian peace talks, try to make effort to involve into the talks between the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli side. But I think to make things easier to comprehend, I think what happened then? What is the difference that we could observe, witness regarding these relationship? First of all, it is important to see that this government, it has been in power since late 2002. The AKP government has a different reading of the Middle East. There are these Islamic look to this situation, for example, to Jerusalem. Having said that, of course, the Turkish public had always been until that time very sensitive about what happened to Jerusalem. But this is somehow different because the governing elite comes from the tradition, the so-called Milli Görüş, national outlook. And the founders of that party are the students of Necmettin Erbakan, and their background, their upbringing is quite different looking at other governments or other people in office earlier on. This is an issue, let's say, first. What about the second difference that we could see in the AKP rule throughout the 2000s? The Erdogan governments, especially until the Arab Spring, had wished to take a very serious role in the Middle East, to be a leading regional power in that geography. To be able to do that, for example, they have been improving their relationship with the Arab world up to a point, as I've said, up to the outbreak of the Syrian war, etc. There had been serious attention to the Arab world, you know, Davutoğlu's zero problems with the neighbors, soft power applications, so on and so forth. And the third issue that we could think of throughout the 2000s, unlike the previous periods, the situation regarding the Arab-Israeli question became very difficult in terms of seeing a conflict-free situation. Even though Israel withdrew from Gaza back in 2005, the situation there has been very serious. Also, war of attrition has been going on, and every time what happens in Gaza is echoing in Turkey, and the reaction is coming from there. So I'm afraid I'm quite out of time. So just a few things I'd like to add. For the first time, this is the peak of the worsening relations. And what happened? First of all, for the first time, this kind of deadly confrontation between Israel and Turkey was experienced. These two states, for the first time again, became the parties to an international legal dispute. The issue, the Marmara issue, was taken to the UN, and a special commission was assembled to take care of this relationship. And beforehand, as I mentioned, there was this desire on the side of Turkey to be mediator and through which to be an influential player in the Middle East, and that kind of steps were frozen. And the Palestinian issue became very much personalized internal issue, and Orna has already told us about the public reaction. Parties of all political spectrum came together to condemn Israel, and this was something not usual in Turkish politics, thinking of its polarized character. And new actors, for example, in the foreign policy came into play, like IHA and Hamas. And for example, in the 70s, there was no such an effect to keep in mind. And there are some more slides and some quotations from both sides, but I think
we will have a chance later, hopefully.
Okay, then I'll leave it here. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Ayşegül. We now turn to James Kerr-Lindsay. We're very grateful that James will be commenting on the book and on the presentations we heard already this evening. James is visiting professor at the European Institute here at LSE, LISE, Research on Southeast Europe. And he has written extensively on conflict, peace and security in the Eastern Mediterranean, a lot on Cyprus, and of course on the Balkans as well. So he has the expertise to sort of comment, I think, in a holistic way on this relationship. And we are very grateful that he's here. 15 minutes, James, so that we can have a bit of time.
Yes,
for
indeed.
Discussion.
Thank you very much, Katerina. And let me also echo the thanks to the organisers, LSE Ideas, for all the work they put into this. But of course, I'm here to really thank the two editors, because I think this is an absolutely fantastic volume. It's one of those volumes that comes along which is incredibly obvious for somebody to have done, but I'm so grateful that they have, because, you know, this is a really, really interesting relationship that they're tackling. And it's a relationship which I think, you know, we can talk about a lot of profound changes in international politics and in Southeast Europe, in the Eastern Mediterranean, but I think this has been one of the most significant that we've seen. And a lot was mentioned about this golden age of the 1990s, and I think the point that was brought up was that, you know, for a long time, Turkey and Israel had, and I keep having to check myself, not Greece and Turkey, because I work a lot on Greek-Turkish relations, getting into my mind that I'm talking about Turkey-Israel. That relationship there was very, very unusual indeed. And it was a very important relationship. It was a very important relationship, I think, for both countries. But as was mentioned, it wasn't quite as plain sailing in that period from the late 1940s through to the 1990s that maybe people think that it was. But we can't get around the fact that the 1990s, and this was the era when I started work on the region, this was a pivotal relationship in the Eastern Mediterranean that we saw between these two countries, and it was incredibly close. There was a great deal of defense cooperation, there was a great deal of intelligence cooperation, and one of the themes that one sees throughout the book is this reference to a golden age in Turkish-Israeli relations. And I think, you know, it's against that backdrop that the real contribution of the book is, it says, right, okay, what happened? What changed this relationship? And how has it changed? And I think there were, you know, there's so many interesting chapters and topics that are covered here that, you know, I won't be able to even begin to sort of talk on all of them. But a few things that I found incredibly interesting was the focus that both the co-editors in their joint chapter on the Mavi Marmara incident, because this was so important in that break in relations. But I think they made the point very, very clear that there was already a change that was, you know, was in process of taking place. And this was the catalytic event, if you like, that really saw things brought out to the fore. But of course, you know, it also paralleled some very interesting changes that were taking place in Turkey itself over the course of the 2000s. Of course, the big event in many ways came in November 2002 when the AKP won the elections in Turkey and set Turkey in many ways on a new course. But like so many other of these sort of big pivotal events, it didn't happen with a bang. It was a major transformation, AKP winning. But we didn't see this amazing change, if you like, in Turkish foreign policy at the time. And I think one of the things that I was always very interested in was the role of the military in Turkish politics and how that relationship and how the continuing involvement of the military, which took place, I would say, it was around 2007 that we saw the big break take place in terms of the role of the military and how that played a role in allowing a certain degree of continuity in that Turkish-Israeli relationship in the first years of the AKP, and how once the military, I think, had ceased to have that degree of control, how that then we saw the transformation under Erdogan in the relationship, and as was mentioned, the Israeli offensive against Gaza, how that led, I think, was the first steps, if you like, that then Mavi Marmara came into. So I thought this was really, really important, how that change from that golden period of the 1990s took place, and it was actually far more gradual. We weren't talking Mavi Marmara until 2010. So you had this decade where AKP had been in power, but we hadn't seen this big break. I think, you know, some of the other things that really stood out for me, and I thought was terribly interesting, was chapter 2 and the nature of religion, you know, the comparative state formation and ideologies. And I thought there was a really interesting contribution that was made on the element of Kemalism and Zionism, in the formation, if you like, of Turkey and Israel, and how trying to draw out these really fascinating, comparisons between these two ideologies, but obviously talking about two countries where in many ways those ideologies have been superseded, by political change, and what that's meant. And I thought that was such an interesting contribution for the book and really added something. I think, you know, another contribution which I found terribly interesting was chapter 6 by Solly Ozel and Selin Nursi, because for anyone who knows and who's worked on Turkey, I mean, Solly is a huge figure who's, you know, really has always got a lot of very interesting things to say. And what he's looked at or what they've looked at in their chapter is the way that Syria has played a role in this relationship between Turkey and Israel. And again, this is an absolutely fascinating story to be told. For anyone who looks back, I mean, we all know, obviously, about the tensions that exist between Israel and Syria and the difficulties in that relationship. But it was also the way that it was brought out, how Turkey itself also had a very difficult relationship with Syria. And again, I remember very much in the 1990s that it was a very antagonistic relationship because, of course, the leader of the PKK, the Kurdish Workers' Party, Abdullah Öcalan, was holed up in Damascus. And I remember very clearly, I was working on Greek-Turkish relations, and I remember how that came to the fore and how close, and people often forget, how close Turkey came to invading Syria in the late 1990s over this incident. And that, in turn, forced Assad Senior to force Öcalan out. He ended up, Öcalan ended up at the Greek embassy. We had a major falling out in Greek-Turkish relations as a result of it. But then, of course, what we've seen is the war in Syria, and how the different relationship and the different reactions that we saw from Tel Aviv and from Ankara in response to the conflict in Syria, and how that's played out. And I think it traces very nicely how the Syrian civil war has actually played into the tensions that existed, but has also played a part in the rapprochement that we've seen between Israel and Turkey since 2016. And so I thought that was, a very, very useful contribution, given the significance of the civil war in Syria, and how that sort of overlaid itself into this complex relationship. But it probably won't come as any surprise to anyone on the panel who knows sort of my regional interest, that the chapter that really stood out for me was, of course, chapter 5, which was looking at the very interesting relationship that has now evolved in the Eastern Mediterranean, and how this close relationship between Turkey and Israel has given way to a very close relationship between Israel, Cyprus, and Greece. Now, I first, as I say, became interested in the Eastern Mediterranean in 1990. My family moved out there, and I just became fascinated and took my studies on from there. But one thing when I was living in Cyprus in the 1990s, which really stood out to me, was the great, and I was going to try and moderate it, but it was actually hatred that you would find amongst many ordinary Cypriots towards Israel. It was a very, very antagonistic relationship. It was a very antagonistic relationship at a political level. Cyprus had built up a very close relationship with the Arab world. And it was, we were talking before we came up here, that in many ways for an Israeli, Cyprus was considered almost enemy territory. It was very unsafe. There were a number of terrorist incidents. I remember there was before I moved to the island, but there was a bombing attack against the Israeli embassy, in Cyprus. And there was very strong popular support for the Palestinian cause. The PLO had an office in Nicosia. And that was tied up, of course, with the Cyprus problem and the realization amongst Greek Cypriots that, look, you know, we need, it's a numbers game in the UN, and they've been very closely aligned with the non-aligned movement. And so it was very much out of this. And so now to go back, I was back on the island a month ago, to hear how Cypriot decision makers talk about this relationship with Israel now is incredible. No, Israel is the friend. This is the key ally, and it's all about this sort of link between Greece, Israel, and Cyprus, and this is tied up with the natural gas that's been discovered in the region. And this energy politics, which is the subject of another chapter in the book, is absolutely fascinating and pivotal to explaining this change in relationship. But it really is something that I personally have found terribly interesting, and I thought was brought out extremely well in the book. I'll probably stop there, but what I would like to say is I really fully sort of recommend this. It's a fantastic book, and as I say, it was one of those ones that, you know, sort of looking at it now, you think, why hadn't somebody done this before? Because this is such an interesting relationship, and it is a relationship that has changed so much in recent years. And I'm really, as I say, absolutely delighted that Aishagul and Orna have put together such a fantastic volume. So thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you. So, and there are flyers for the book circulating in the room, and of course you can buy it with a discount if you decide to use them. So I'm going to open the floor for questions. Thank you very much, James, and all of you for sticking to the time. We have about 25 minutes, I think, and I will start by taking individual questions. If I see that they're coming hard and fast, then I will take them in a bunch. So, who would like to start? Yes. Would you mind introducing yourself as well? Thank you.
Hello there. My name's Michael Daventry. I'm a journalist, former LSE student as well. Fascinating talks. Thank you very much, everybody. I've got 3 points which I'm going to make very quickly, I promise. Just on the question of Turkey being the first Muslim country to recognize Israel, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I was under the impression, and I could definitely be wrong, that Iran had recognized Israel as well up until 1979. And obviously the relationship between Israel and Turkey is joyous compared to the relationship between Israel and Iran today. But of course, in Shah times, I was under the impression that there was actually quite a burgeoning relationship. I may be wrong. Please correct me on that if so. I wonder if, Orna, maybe you'd be able to comment a little bit more about trade, because you touched on it. Turkish Israeli relations on trade, because despite the diplomatic disagreements between the two, trade has singularly been going up between Israel and Turkey. I'd be interested to see how sustainable you feel that is. James, I was also very interested about the attitude of Cypriots towards Israel. Again, my limited understanding was that Israelis, especially non-religious Israelis, always used Cyprus as a destination to get married. I was very fascinated to hear that there was okay. So much visceral anger at Israelis. Mm. So if you could comment on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, with regard to trade, basically, yes, trade was going on all the time, but I didn't have time to say it, but trade is the hidden face of relationship. So while trade can go on, and while Israel might allow also for its benefit for trade to go on, trade is not enough to sustain the relationship, because it's something which is done not very much in the public, and therefore it was also, I think, easier for Turkey to continue trade. Also, with the Arab Spring and all the upheaval that was going around, it was much easier to send goods via Israel and then through the Allenby bridges to Jordan and then to the rest of the Middle East. So it was kind of a safer way. But it's really, as I say, it's the hidden face, and I'm not saying it. It's actually in chapter 6, I think Paul Rivlin is saying it. It's the hidden face. And it's not something which is important, but it's not really the major issue. It is something that might bring revenue, but the core issue is, as was mentioned, the energy and, you know, who is getting the revenue. That's very important. And obviously the political one, because what is happening with the Turkish-Israeli relation that most of the time emotion take over. At some point, sometime real politics, like in June 2016, takes over. So the trade is in a way the hidden face of real politics. Okay, but it's not as something that would really signify or signal kind of any change. It's really convenient for both sides, and it's done quite quietly, and that's why it continues throughout.
About these trade relations, it is interesting to observe, regardless of political turmoil in the relations, regardless of problems in the political relations, trade relations has been going on. And it is interesting to note, for example, between the year 2006 and 2000, I think it was 2016, 80% increase in the trade was recorded. And this is interesting to note because, you know, after the Hamas elections, after the Gaza confrontation, the both sides, I think, have been quite careful in differentiating their political relations with that of economic ties. And this is also a characteristics, we may say, in the relations. Coming to your point about who was the first to recognize Israel, I mean, Muslim-majority country. Iran, at the time, had very good relations, but behind the closed doors. The Shah and Israel had many deals, but not official recognition was extended. So I'm pretty sure, and I'm sure everybody is here, so there is no such a thing. About Cyprus, or would you like to?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Michael. It would be an important place for people to be able to go to, because I believe that the laws in Israel at the time were very restrictive.
I'll just correct you, okay, it's Israeli. The people who normally chose to get married in Cyprus, was not a question of being secular or not. Yeah, they were secular. However, some people, according to the Jewish law, because Israel for marriage and divorce only applied religious law. And some people, according to the Jewish law, unfortunately cannot get married in Israel. So they opted for Cyprus. Sorry for interrupting. And also, some people kind of, if you want, in principle, didn't want to get married in a religious ceremony or in a religious, under religious law. So they opted for one. But the majority went to the, what called Cyprus marriage, where a lot of people in Israel, they could not get married under religious, Jewish religious law.
Yeah, so I mean, it was an easy location for them to get to. Also, there was another side of it, which was gambling was illegal, and maybe still is illegal in Israel. And there were ferries which were regularly run from Larnaca over to Haifa. And I remember doing one of these at one point, not because it was specifically gambling, but that was the thing. And it was fascinating to see. And they said that, you know, it would dock in at Haifa, and a lot of Israelis would get on, and then it would go to Egypt. They wouldn't bother getting off the boat. They wouldn't bother getting off the boat at Cyprus, and then just go back, and it would just be two days of gambling, you know. And it was a big money spinner at the time. It was actually sort of very, very interesting. So it wasn't as though there were no contacts, but at a popular level, and the way that it was reported, there was great antagonism, that Israel wasn't trusted, Israelis weren't liked. People in Cyprus were also very aware, especially in the 90s, of this close military relationship between Israel and Turkey. And so it was seen that Israel was actually antagonistic. There was also talk about Israeli investment in northern Cyprus, which was also very problematic, and people felt that this was something, again, which was being hostile towards the Republic. I remember incidents when Israelis were arrested for being Mossad agents, and that caused a diplomatic spat. So there was this whole pattern of very antagonistic relations that existed between Cyprus and Israel that you don't hear of today. It's almost like everyone sort of has conveniently forgotten just how difficult that relationship is. And you wouldn't really... It's not that it's completely disappeared. You still see in certain instances. So while the government, for example, is very positive at the moment, recently, for example, the House, I'm trying to remember, I think it was on the question of the U.S. Recognition of Israeli annexation of Golan Heights. I think there was a certain amount of opposition amongst parliamentarians towards that. So it's not as though it's completely plain sailing. But on the whole, as I say, that antagonistic relationship with the past has all disappeared. Now it's about, but I think the book brings out, it's also a very functional relationship. And I think one of the questions I have in my mind is, you know, Israel, it's nice and convenient to have this relationship with Greece and Cyprus. But whatever happens, if things change in Turkey and Turkey reaches out to Israel again, I think they'll drop them fairly quickly.
I think that's a question, sorry, that I was asked personally in Greece, giving a talk from Greek state. Yeah, but what would happen when you have better relationship with Turkey? Are you going to drop us?
Okay, next question. Yes. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Suna Akarsuna. I'm an ex-LSE student, but many years ago, I'm not going to say the year. My question is again about the trading. So you have been, obviously the focus of the book and the presentations about the political relationship, which we have been myself witnessing, this up and downs. But during this up and down, so who's benefiting from this trade? The Turkey or Israel? That's my question.
Actually, Israel is making...
I should give you the microphone.
Making most of the profit from that relationship, given the fact that economies are quite complementary, but the thing is, Israel is selling high-tech stuff. In return, Turkey is generally selling agricultural goods or in some sectors, labor-intensive products are on the sale. So that's why, as far as I know, I don't know the numbers because not in my expertise, but as far as I know, in that volume of trade, Israel is the advantageous party.
Other questions? Maybe I can... Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Just a sort of idiot question for information, really.
Can you introduce yourself?
Oh, sorry. Sheila Tremlett from Oxford Continuing Education. Why did Turkey decide to recognize Israel at such an early stage, just 1 year after the first Arab-Israeli war? What was the motivation? What was in it for them?
So, Ayşegül, maybe you can start?
Yes. The thing is, the major driving force behind Turkey's recognition was its desire to be closer to the U.S. You know, U.S.-Israel relations has always been special. One of the major foreign policy of U.S. towards the Middle East has been the security of Israel. And at the time, Turkey was willing to be part of NATO. Turkey joined NATO in 1952. And it was in the process of displaying U.S. how relevant or how pro-Western it could be, including in the Middle East, in the relations with Israel. Of course, I am a bit simplifying the whole story, but as a matter of fact, when you look at literature, generally speaking, this is the idea behind Turkey's decision to be the first one. External influence rather than internal expectations led the way through this recognition.
Maybe I can ask a couple of questions. We talk a lot about the energy issue as being a divisive issue in the Eastern Mediterranean, and there it's a very complex situation with many different players. Egypt, even Lebanon, I think, plays a part in this whole business as well. But I wonder if one can see the energy issue as an opportunity for conflict resolution, not just for conflict. So in the interest, sort of given that everyone would be positively inclined towards sharing this this energy, could there be ways of resolving other aspects of the relationship in order to proceed with the benefits of that? So that's one question. My second question is with regards to the current state of play in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the prospects of a Palestinian state and the question questions around that. Of course, people are taking sides, but there seems to be unanimity that, or there is considerable unanimity in many parts of the region that everyone should be aiming for that objective. Is this something that perhaps Turkey can play a positive role in the future, or is this role that the AKP government has tried to play it in the past in these kinds of areas, is it dead and buried now?
I'll start with the second question because that's obviously even more than the other one. From Israel's point of view, at the moment, the answer is no. And I'm saying it is a very clear cut, although to the fact that Turkey would play a role. I think the animosity, the real animosity, which I even didn't get into my paper, but one of the former Israeli ambassador to Turkey actually said in an interview quite recently that as far, in spite of rapprochement between Turkey and Israel, Turkey is a hostile country to Israel. And I think also the recognition of Turkey of Hamas and in a way supporting Hamas action and so on and so on is from Israel's point of view, it's something that really rightly or wrongly, it doesn't matter, endangers security. And really when it's come to the world security in Israel, they don't joke about it. And to them, Turkey has endanger or might try to endanger Israel's security. So they see it as a very hostile country. Yes, a country that might have some influence with the Palestinian. However, from Israel's point of view, they don't want to increase the power of the Hamas. They would like to, if at all, to increase the power of the PA, the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. They want the Palestinian Authority, and I'm talking about the one who even want any kind of conflict resolution, they would like to see the PA, the one in the West Bank, and not Hamas. Now, of course, you know, having said that, whatever is true today in the Middle East, we might wake up tomorrow and it's totally what I'm saying is rubbish. But as it's saying now, I don't see Israel wanting Turkey to be a mediator. I don't think Israel ever wanted Turkey to be a mediator. From my point of view, even when the former Israeli prime minister was in Turkey and Erdogan got very insulted because he didn't confine him about the operation in Gaza, I don't think the Israeli trust now Turkey. And I think this trust has broken. So for the time being, I cannot see Israel willing to let the Turks taking any active role. It might let them take active role where it's concern Israeli soldiers that Israel would like to release or something like this, but that's about it. And also the hope was that Turkey might help to release some soldiers, blah, blah, and bring the bodies to Israel, which never happened. So from Israel point of view, it's important to have a rapprochement with Turkey, but really it's too hard now with Turkey. It's too hard. And yes, they would like to have some sort of relationship because Turkey has a military might. But to a large degree, Israel does not need it anymore because it has Egypt, it has Jordan, it has the Balkan state, it has Egypt, Cyprus, Turkey. It's in a very, it even has to a degree Saudi Arabia. So Israel is in a very different position. And I think At the moment, as I see it, the animosity between the two prime minister and the two government, which in Israel is very right-wing, is too wide to bridge over.
I was supposed to mention about the importance of how the Palestinian peace process changed, and instead of seeing the possibility of this two-state solution, now there is something else inside. For example, President Trump, as far as I remember, in June, there would be another peace plan. And there is this widening gap between Israel and Turkey, first of all, to about what sort of Palestine Israeli relations could be in the future. Turkey is still talking about two-state solution and the importance of settlement problem. For example, Netanyahu, just before the elections, mentioned about the annexation of settlement areas in the West Bank. And these kind of things are quite foreign to the Erdogan government. And especially U.S. role in here is also very important. Trump perhaps has been the most pro-Israeli president ever. And, you know, he moved, as you all know, moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and that was a thing Turkey had serious objection and withdrew its ambassador, so on and so forth. Therefore, I think the very idea of finding a solution to the Palestinian question is somehow very difficult to handle. I mean, because the parties have been saying something else, and they are very firm about their policies. For example, it is impossible for Netanyahu to see a solution including Hamas or including anything to do with Hamas. But turning to Turkey, Turkey has a relationship with the Palestinian Authority as well as Hamas, and therefore it would be hard for the foreseeable future. There are other mediators now. Egypt, for example, is forthcoming in terms of trying to mediate, but I agree with Orna. I mean, in the short run, it would be rather hard to see that kind of role taken by Turkey.
James, you have to say something positive now on energy, because we cannot... We cannot finish with such a negative atmosphere.
Before I touch on the energy, actually, I'd just like to say, I mean, you know, what's also interesting in this whole debate about Palestine is that, you know, of course, Turkey's engagement with Hamas is extremely problematic from a European point of view as well, because obviously Hamas is a proscribed terrorist organization in Europe. So that's actually been sort of quite a complicating factor, because, of course, Turkey is saying to Europeans, but hold on, we want you to take action against PKK. We regard that as a terrorist organization. And then the Europeans are saying, well, look, you know, what about your engagement with Hamas? Well, that's very different. And so you start to get into these interesting debates. But of course, the flip side of this, of course, which is mentioned in the book as well, is the Israeli support for the Kurds. Which has come out, which has also been an antagonizing factor in this. And one might remember before Iraqi Kurdistan held its referendum on independence, which didn't go anywhere because of a lot of international pressure, the one country that first stepped out and said, look, if they want to declare independence, we would be open to recognizing them, was Israel under Netanyahu. And that was also a complicating element in that relationship that existed. And one wonders whether that was, in many ways, Tel Aviv getting back at the Turks and saying, right, okay, if you want to engage with Hamas, then, you know, we can start to engage with groups that you really don't want us to be dealing with, and support causes which you find very sensitive. So even though we have a certain amount of rapprochement that's obviously going on between Israel and Turkey, you do see this sort of needling relationship over these issues. The energy. Look, you know, this is again, on top of this changed relationship, the whole energy debate in the Eastern Mediterranean has been a fascinating development in recent years. So, you know, I do a lot of work on the Cyprus problem, and there's lots of talk about how energy is going to transform that. I tend to take a much more skeptical view. I think that it's far more damaging in many ways. And I think the question that a lot of people have in their mind is that, you know, Cyprus says that, look, it wants to play this central hub role, if you like. It wants to be the way that Israel can export its natural gas to the outside world. But, you know, for anyone who looks at this issue, they say, you know, there's no point Cyprus doing this until and unless it can build a pipeline from the island to Turkey and pipe it that way. I'm not an expert on energy, but from what I've heard, the idea that Cyprus would build liquefied natural gas terminals is just pie in the sky. I mean, these things are insanely expensive to build, these terminals. And somebody was saying that, you know, Australia built one fastest in all time, and it still took them 10 years or something. And partly because it's extremely complex engineering. You're talking about one of the most flammable substances you can imagine in an earthquake zone. So when you start to build these things, you've got to, and anyway, there's people who look at all of this. It just, from what I can tell from people, they're sort of saying no. A much more interesting relationship obviously exists in this front is Israel-Egypt. But then you start to get into odd antagonisms, because Egypt also is trying to export its own natural gas. So it's just made a complex region all that more complex. Thank you.
Okay. Not too negative. A little bit. All right. One more question. Yes. Can you introduce yourself, please? Just checking the time.
Milan Zavi from KCL, International Development Society. Would you consider that if the Israeli-Palestinian conflict ever came to a resolution, that would automatically ameliorate the Israeli-Turkish relations? Or is there still other issues that have to be tackled before that gets better?
Interesting question.
I think it would be a serious degree of improvement in the relations, because now the Palestinian issue is the number one concern of Turkey, because Erdogan made it a name for himself because of his bond with the Palestinian issue. Not only he's defending Palestinian interest in connection with Israel, but at international platforms also, he is the leading figure in the promotion of the Palestinian cause. Therefore, I believe, yes, it would make a great difference. But of course, it would not be the only issue that would resolve all the problems between the two states.
Yeah, I agree with Aishagul. I think, yes, hopefully if there was a resolution from Israel's point of view that would take away the thorniest and most important issue, the divide, too, because it would take the security issue from Israel's point of view away. I agree with Aishagul also that, yes, there is the issue of Iran, which is important, very important. And I would just like to say that from Israel's point of view, Hamas is not the major enemy. From Israel's point of view, Iran is the main enemy. Right? Number one is Iran, number two is Iran, and then maybe number three is Hamas. So if there will be still division vis-a-vis Iran, like major one, it will still be an obstacle. However, having said that, yes, I think taking away this point of contention of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it would bring a substantial improvement, because I think it would stop all these kind of accusation on both sides, you know, kind of between Erdogan attacking Netanyahu, Netanyahu answering, and so on, really, like, as I say, a football match. So, yes, I think that would improve, seriously improve the relationship. It might not come back to what it used to be before, still, because we have different ideologies on both sides, but it would definitely pave the way for, let's say, less animosity and a bit more a friendship, let's call it like this. Yes.
Okay, thank you. It's almost 8 o'clock. Before ending, I'd like to announce that on the 23rd of May, in this very room, there is an event, an ideas event, again, on NATO's 70th birthday. Again, of course, related to Turkey. You're all invited to that. I mentioned the flyers with the discount. And there are also, I think, surveys that you can fill in about the event. If you could, that would be very helpful for ideas. But before concluding, let me thank our three panelists very much. Of course, the authors, the editors, and James for a very informative and interesting discussion. I'm sorry we ended on a slightly negative note. It's my fault for asking about the Palestinian issue. But we have learned a lot, and thank you all very much. Thank you.